Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thank you again for joining us. Once again, Gary Watts is with us. He's the owner of the real estate company Impact Real Estate in Orange County, and he's one of the most recognized experts in speaking on the economy of California and the direction of the real estate market. Gary, once again, we welcome you to our show.
Thank you very much, Bruce.
Okay. Gary, in 2007, in September, I think you were speaking in front of a group in Northern California, and you mentioned that downturns usually last some 28 to 36 months, and a couple of questions came to mind. In hindsight, when did Californians downturn begin?
Beginning in the second quarter of 06.
Okay. And what were we able to look at and say, okay, there it is? What statistic told you that that was, yep, here we are?
Well, from a historical standpoint, I know that in general in the state of California, it varies, obviously, from area to area. Southern California, let me say, started in the second quarter. Sacramento and the Inland Empire probably started at the beginning of 06 or at the end of 05. And what you can see from those points is that, number one, the buying started to decline, and number two, inventories were rising dramatically.
Absolutely.
And the interesting thing about that is that after the first quarter, especially here in Southern California, after the first quarter of 2006, for most of the areas except the Inland Empire, you were still making, you know, around 12 to 15% that quarter over the previous quarter a year ago, same quarter a year ago. So what happened was is that a whole flood of inventory came on the market thinking that they could up their prices. And it flooded the market, and nothing, you know, at the same time buyers were pulling out of the market, and those two combinations really began the downward motion.
This is a little bit off the topic, but since you brought it up, I'm just going to go there. Is one of the difficult things about being a realtor in 2008 trying to get a seller to give you a realistic listing price, or do they still have in mind what yesterday was like?
You know what? I think it was more difficult in 07.
Okay.
I think 08, they've read enough headlines. They've heard enough both broadcast or electronic medias to know that, you know, you better be serious.
Okay. Usually our downturns in California, you've said, have started with unemployment issues.
Correct.
And this one seemed to have a different origin.
Absolutely.
So what do you think that origin was?
It began in 06 when the subprime market, which had been going very strong, started showing some upticks in delinquencies.
Okay.
And that caused some of the lenders to tighten up their standards, and the money started to slow down from the East Coast banks. And that combination with a declining buying market, because in reality, when you look at 03, 04, and 05, we had so many people not only buying their first house, but you had the upscale market buying either second homes or investment property. And the question is, you can only buy so many second homes or so many investment properties.
Yes.
So by the end of 05, it was pretty clear that people had made their investments, people had purchased their second homes, and that was 39% of the market in 04.
And that percentage had never been approached before?
Never.
Okay.
And so that, I mean, you could just say that with our sales being down 40%, we could just say it's all second homes and investment property is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But what it did is it skyrocketed the volume. And so all those purchases gave the illusion that, oh my gosh, you know, things, you know, there's really a flood of buyers out there.
Well, and there's that psychological effect that takes hold to where people do not view this as a risk when they're signing up for $500,000 loan on their third house that has a negative cash flow, something along that line.
Oh, absolutely. If the house was going up, you know, 1.5% a month, who cared if you had a $1,000 negative?
Right. It made sense. And then all of a sudden, the game ended. What was the Fed doing about this time? When did they start raising rates, and when did they get that done?
Well, it was up until a couple of months ago, they had gone on a, 14 consecutive price interest rate rises.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this leads to a really interesting question. The Federal Reserve let something go unchecked for too long, and that was mortgage brokers. They didn't need to necessarily be licensed. The people they employed, no background checks, and they became a huge entity in this lending market, because the money was available from so many different sources.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't belong to any national association or state association. They weren't regulated. And the Federal Reserve, I think behind closed doors, big banks will admit that the Federal Reserve, when this crisis started to be, build up, the reason they didn't bring in the rescue package last year versus this year was that they wanted to clean that industry out. When the money stopped flowing, they just wanted to let it die, and now look what happens. If you're going to open up a mortgage company, or if you have a mortgage company, you need to belong to a national organization. You need to belong to the state organization. You're going to be fingerprinted, and background checks are going to be done. We're introducing new regulations, we're introducing new regulations on lending and truth in lending, because what they're finding out is a tremendous amount of the foreclosures was just pure unethical lending, where these mortgage brokers, unfortunately, lied to the general public about what was really going on in their loan. A fascinating study out of San Diego, they have 60,000 subprime loans down there, and they were looking at their subprime foreclosures, the ones that finally went, and they found out that a lot of ethnic brokers targeted ethnic neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
did all the qualifying in their language, whether it's Asian, Chinese, Hispanic, etc.
Okay.
But the loan docs are all in English. So they weren't going to have a prepayment penalty, but they ended up with a prepayment penalty. Their margins were only going to go up this high, but they really went up that high. And this was the biggest problem they found, was that these people were qualified in one language and signed loan documents in English.
Interesting. I hadn't heard that.
I thought that was fascinating.
I guess I thought that probably the consumer was conspirator in a way, to where that stated income number was knowingly fudged and accepted by the mortgage broker.
Oh, no, there's no doubt that, Bruce, you're correct. There's no doubt that went on as well.
Okay.
But the biggest problems of foreclosures comes from the minority communities.
Okay. But is that because, too, there were a lot of first-time buyers that would naturally be part of that group, too?
Yes.
Okay.
But they were also, it appears, preyed upon.
Sure. And I think that
they were easy pickings.
Okay. Do you feel that these lax lending policies really allowed California prices to go to a place or a level that they really wouldn't have gone otherwise?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So what we're giving back now is just getting back to a number that produces a payment that's realistic to what we're making. Is that...
Yes, I agree with you on that totally.
Okay. Now, does that have to do with affordability? I hate to bring up that subject with you, but...
No, yeah, because I think I'm one of the advocates that the affordability formula that is, God knows, God is the only one who knows how old it is. Archaic.
I really like it, though,
You do?
I do. It's fun that we're getting into this. I'll tell you... For me, it's the first indicator of a downturn. And when you're looking backwards, and you've done a lot of it,
mm-hmm.
I always look for something that's similar rather than – there are differences. There's no doubt. 90 to 96, we had a lot of unemployment issues. But prior to that, the builders actually were building less homes in the end of 1989. And the affordability number hit 14% for the state for a month. Somewhere around July, August.
Okay.
That didn't happen again until August of 2005.
Yeah.
And you know, I pay attention to the repetitiveness. I don't try to invent it, but I look at it and go, okay, things don't go well after that would be why I think affordability is important. But I know that you think it's not that important.
Well, I think that, see, I'm thinking of what academia used to say, that if it fell below 25%, you were going to have a housing downturn.
Well, and that's baloney because it explodes after 25 until it gets to 14, isn't it?
Yeah, now if 14 is a new number, that might be relevant, but here's what your listeners need to know. Number one is that, especially here in Southern California, when you talk about measuring affordability, you're looking at income versus payments, correct?
Correct, that's correct.
Okay, but what happens when the income that is reported is only 68% of what the people are making, because it doesn't count Social Security, it doesn't count capital gains, it doesn't count investment income, it doesn't count dividends.
Okay, did it ever? And are you saying that it just has increased, that difference has increased?
Correct.
Okay.
The difference has increased because the people have gotten wealthier.
Okay.
And therefore, they do different things. Also, you've got, you know, self-employment income. You know, self-employment's never in there. And it's a huge part of our employment base. So this is the reason that I say it's less important than it has been in the past.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we got that out on air. That was just fun.
Yeah, good.
There's a lot of resets coming in 08, and I don't know that anything is going to prevent somebody from walking away from a mortgage when their reset comes and their payment gets out of hand and they're in a negative equity position. What's your feeling on that?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. The question will be is are these lenders going to reset these loans? Now, what was it last week where they announced that the top X number of banks are going to not reset?
Yes.
And they're going to work on these things.
For 30 days, yeah.
A lot of the lenders don't want to reset. I think they're recognizing that they need to be more proactive in this situation and not take this property back.
That would be a smart decision. It's almost beyond comprehension that they'd actually do it. I'm all for them doing away with the due on sale clause, to be honest with you. They should do a moratorium on that and not care who makes the payment.
Exactly. That's a very good point.
I'm serious. Wouldn't that solve it? Especially, California is a different animal in that we would have no way to make that make sense as an investor because of the negative cash flow. But in a state like a Texas, that would solve their foreclosure problem overnight. Let somebody walk in and take over, no down, a 5.5% mortgage rate for a rental. It'd be over in a heartbeat.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's get that started, because I think that would solve. They're trying to create liquidity. You've said that most of the mortgage market, what, 85% of it is fixed. Well, that's...
It's prime.
Prime, okay. There's a lot of fixed in there, too. Wouldn't that make trillions of dollar liquidity just by being able to reuse the existing mortgage?
Exactly.
That would make a lot more sense than writing checks to me.
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly.
Well, let's get Carr on the ball. Let's talk about the press a little bit. Give me an example of press coverage that was accurate but misleading, because there's a lot of that.
Well, okay, that would be a good example would be, you know, subprime delinquencies, subprime foreclosures soar to 16%.
Okay.
Now, one of the issues is that the media misleads the general public, is they're using the word foreclosures as a headline because that's catchy. If you read in there, they'll say the foreclosure process, which includes delinquencies, notices of default, and then finally the foreclosure process. Now, if we go back to the third quarter, which is the last time there's numbers available, when there was that 16% delinquency on both fixed and adjustable subprime loans, the media never goes and says that in that same quarter, they never published that, whoops, only 4.72% of those people had a notice of default filed against them. And then in the third quarter, they don't say that, you know what, only 3.12% went to foreclosure. So you're looking, they love that 16% delinquency, but they tie it in, you know, 16% of the homes heading to foreclosure. But the reality was in that quarter, only 3% went. And so that's where they were accurate with their numbers, but the way they structure the column is misleading.
I wonder sometimes, and I've been interviewed a fair amount too, and I just think that there is a lack of experience on who's doing the interviewing, to where sometimes what you're saying isn't really registering in the full sense. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. I had a gentleman interview me last week. I was, because I'm the board spokesman for the Orange County Association of Realtors when it comes to the economics and numbers. And they called because, you know, the new lenders were coming out with their package of freezing loans and things like that. And he was asking questions, and you can tell when they don't know what they're talking about.
They don't even know the question they asked.
I said, do you understand what wholesale mortgaging is? Oh, no, I really don't. I said, do you understand? And he goes, no, but he says, you know, I just need to get a few things. And that's the problem.
It is a problem because you don't even – sometimes the sequence is wrong.
Oh, yeah. They're asking the wrong questions.
Yes.
You try to say, you know what? What would be better is if you looked at this picture. But they're very myopic.
Yeah.
They're told by somebody, this is what we want to cover.
I agree.
And, Bruce, I'm sure the same thing. They'll call you. They'll interview you for 15, 20, 25 minutes. You get two lines. And it's the least impacted lines they could find out of your conversation.
Exactly. Or just completely pulled out of context.
Yeah.
To where you just go, holy mackerel.
I know.
It's almost like, maybe I shouldn't talk to anybody anymore. Now, do you feel the press has an equally buoyant effect when housing's going the other way?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the things here locally with the Orange County Register. When in, 2004 or 5, they had 500-point headlines. Housing, you know, median home surpasses $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course that's going to drive it. And when we were discussing it, I said, look, he goes, the media doesn't have that much impact on a consumer. Consumers should use various sources before they make a decision. And I just simply said, look, you weren't called the fourth estate for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, they can do both.
The buyer in general is different than they were 10 years ago. They do a lot of researching about properties prior to calling agents. Are they also doing lots of research about the news that's prevalent at the time?
I think that they're aware of the news. They see it on their internet screen. Mm-hmm. When they're checking news via, you know, electronic. They hear special stories or subsets of stories on the local news channels. They're aware of things are going, but I think that for the educated buyer, he realizes that there's a bias in the media, and therefore he does his research, and when he comes to us as realtors, he has these questions. And what's really important for realtors to know is that get your facts down. You've got to become educated so that you can dispel some of the myths or misunderstandings they have about what they've heard.
Mm-hmm. In the numbers of foreclosures, let's talk about that, because that'd be one of the articles they've been seeing repetitively.
Yeah.
And the numbers are truly historic in our county.
Mm-hmm.
And they are in many counties. Orange County is getting to where the number's probably going to be at an all-time record. And yet, in Orange County, it's probably skewed to limited number of cities. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. I saw a great report where we have about 1,465 zip codes in the state of California.
Okay.
293 of them is where almost all of the foreclosures are located. So only 20%. And so, yeah, it's skewed. For instance, to answer your question here in Orange County, Westminster, Garden Grove, Santa Ana is where the bulk of our foreclosures are. And you're talking about Asian and Hispanic markets.
Did your builders, one of the things that happened in the Inland Empire is the builders just really overbuilt. And so we had a double whammy. We had lots of private sellers trying to sell simultaneous with the builders unloading inventory and being very generous with either discounts or giveaways. So did Orange County have a smaller problem with that?
No. This cycle we didn't, because, you know, Orange County is almost, you know, built out.
Okay.
So we didn't have that problem. We had it in the 70s. We had it in the 80s. But by the downturn in the 90s, once we weaved ourselves out of that issue, we became rather stable. We don't have a tremendous, I mean, we used to be building 12,000 homes a year, and we're down to 3,500, 2,500. So you can see that loss, or that drop in inventory. But compared to you being a new community out there, you're going to go through these cycles for the next 20 years where when the exuberance gets back in there and the builders come back in, trying to rein in builders is tough. They get all excited, and they like exactly like you said, they don't pay attention to demographics, employment numbers. They just build because they've got people standing in line.
Well, you know, it's one of the things you mentioned where you could get you could misread the tea leaves is if everyone's buying your product, it seems like you should build some more and maybe never check that 40% of it was going to people that weren't living in them.
Yes.
That probably would be a good idea, and maybe not to do that next time. But I've noticed they do exactly the same thing every time.
Yeah, it's amazing. And they will, you know, and they forgot about it. And then I think around 2006, they remembered, and they started limiting the investment purchases to 10% of the neighborhood.
Well, you know,
because they were destroying the social fabric.
Yes, that is a problem when you have a lot of vacancies, or you know, just people bought them for money. And I'm an investor, so you know, I'm being a little disloyal here because I probably did some of it myself. But yeah, a neighborhood, it's nice if everybody lives there. No doubt about that. Foreclosures, as far as statewide, though. I look at these numbers, and let's say Southern California. Southern California is probably going to produce 200,000 closed escrows in 08, and I think about 100,000 of those will be a combination of lender-owned property sales and short sales. That ratio has never existed before, and I honestly can't see how real estate is going to do good things in 2008. I think it's going to take its lumps. What's your feeling on that?
For Southern California, yes, there'll be pockets that will be better than others. Again, unfortunately, the Inland Empire is going to be, you know, the stepchild that really gets abused in this marketplace. San Diego seems to be showing some signs of strength for three consecutive months there. They've had the least amount of drop in their sales. They were also the first to go in, so that may be a harbinger of things starting to turn around. We're right now in Orange County, a new report came out where about 38% of our market is the bank and foreclosure short sale.
Mm-hmm.
And so that obviously is going to keep a lid on any chance of properties going up. And it's just a question of the pent-up demand, the new conforming rates. You know, people have often asked, what are you forecasting this year? And I said, how can you forecast? You've got, you know, all the standing inventory from banks and pending short sales.
Plus,
you have loan programs that we know are supposed to come out, but no one's really defined them, and we don't know how the lenders are going to qualify. It's just too dark out there, and not from a, you know, a negative standpoint. It's just that there's just too many unknown things out there that still need to be resolved.
Right. It'd be very hard to say this is going to happen because there's also a lot of intervention going on. So, that's sort of like doing a put option on a bank, and all of a sudden you find out they got bailed out by $20 billion. It's hard to do.
Exactly.
We've got to wrap up here in the next minute. But long term, I've got to tell you, it's probably the best thing that I have seen happen in California is that we restructure our price down to where people can actually afford it. And I think it's going to once again attract a huge amount of migration domestically. And at a perfect time when people are retiring, we have an area, Moreno Valley, that has gone from 400 to 200. And with a payment on the interest rate, say, at 6%, it's almost approximating rent, and it's almost approximating the payment from somebody in Texas.
Yes, and when you get to those levels, you're absolutely correct. Then the buyers will come back into the market, or even the investors.
Yeah, we're gonna win that battle because California has a lot of goodies that other states don't. Gary, we got to run. Thank you so much for being with us the last two shows.
Bruce, you're more than welcome.
Thanks a lot.
You bet. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
Catch Bruce and the Norris Group team March 7th through 9th in Los Angeles as Bruce discusses California real estate market timing and then teaches his California-only Essentials course live in combination with a full day of training by land trust expert Bill Gatton. Bruce will also be speaking March 8th at the Global Real Estate Investment Expo in San Francisco. For specific dates, times, and locations, visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or call 951-780-5856 today.